Yes, we're here with the maestro, Herbert Blumstead. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
Well, this program of Mozart and Brahms is beautiful. Have you paired these two composers together in the past?
No, I don't think I made this this combination. The symphony was my wish, and that was the wish of Mr. Olson. Or I might have proposed it because I want to have a work that is sort of matching the Brahms. So it must be one of the longer, greater Mozart concerto. And I think this number 25, C major, the Köchel 503, is one of his largest, also in numbers of minutes. Okay, you can get wonderful music also in 3 minutes. You don't have to have 25, 35 minutes. But this is also a large scope. It's Beethoven in dimensions, also in piano technique. It's very advanced.
And it's so interesting because these two composers, even though they're part of the same continuum, they worked very differently. I understand Mozart wrote this piano concerto as the 12th in 2 years.
Incredible, yes. And Brahms wrote this symphony very shortly after the other one. You know, he hesitated very long to finish his first symphony. It took him 15 years to compose it. But it was so successful, so within a year he had another symphony ready. He got the taste for it and the self-confidence.
And what is it about Brahms, and this Brahms symphony in particular, that draws you in?
Well, he has four symphonies. There's nothing compared to Mozart's 41 or Haydn's 104. But simply the dimensions, not only in minutes, but also in inner tension and depth, are very great. His model was, of course, Beethoven. And that was why he hesitated also so long to publish one. He felt intimidated by this the greatness of Beethoven. And he felt also called to do something, you know, of the same scale, which is a very heavy burden to carry. When he was 20, Schumann published an article about him that this is the coming man, this is the new man for our century. So how do you be able to live up to that? He surely did. And this symphony, I think, is one of his most diversified and greatest symphonies. It's very heroic in character. Some call it even his tragic symphony. I would say it is more heroic than tragic. All four movements end in pianissimo. He never did that before. I remember even one of my mentors 50 years ago, he said, Brahms' Third Symphony, impossible to play, it ends pianissimo. Nobody will applaud. And here all movements end in pianissimo. And still we all agree, I think listeners and players alike, that this is just the right way.
What's been your approach this week with the Philadelphia Orchestra in terms of how you are working with them with this symphony?
Well, I listen to them, and then I work from there. Now, this is a wonderful orchestra, one of the greatest orchestras you can imagine. They give me something. We play, for 3-4 minutes. I listen to them, and I tell them what I would like to change. I give them some ideas. Perhaps where I didn't find any of those ideas, because after all, they have played this symphony, some of them, 100 times. They know what it's all about. But they have many, many different interpretations. If they have played it 100 times, they have 100 interpretations. So they are curious, what is this going to be now? So they give me a sort of blank, you know. These are the notes, this is what we think. Now, what do you think? Of course, we don't say that, but that's the expectation we have. You know, I know that they can play well and expect some miraculous sounds from them. And they say, why are we playing this again? You know, they want to hear what does he think. So this is a sort of information that goes on during while we are playing. And most of the communication is without words, it's with eyes and gestures. I have my eyes all over, and I hear what they give me, and I try to infuse them with my ideas. And if they are not, I hope that they are accepted, what I hear it is that they accept, they play with very great warmth, they respond, actually. As I respond to them, they respond to me. This is a give and take situation.
Have you, in your understanding and relationship with this piece, changed the way you think about it over the years?
Oh, I change all the time. I have a different opinion tomorrow, but of course not radically so. There might be small things or insight that strikes me that I never thought of before. We have to keep our minds open. If we put on the piece, you know, I played all this, I played, 50 times, let's just repeat the last one. That does not work. We have always to be seekers. Now, if we just show the public what we can do, then we are really charlatans. You know, we want to show how clever we are. Or that does not impress anybody. What we want is to seek the truth behind the notes. That's what the orchestra wants. That's also what I want to know. And so we try to find it in the concert.
I noticed that the instruments are sitting in different spots from what they usually do in Philadelphia. Could you talk about why that's important to you?
Yeah, the main thing is that the first and second violin have to be divided, because there's lots of dialogue between the first and second violins, and they have the same color. Of course, there's dialogue also between the first violin and cellos and basses, who usually sit to the right. But then you hear that immediately, because they are in different register, a different instrument. But violins are the same instrument. You cannot hear the dialogue between them. You have no stereo, to speak in modern terms, if they sit together. By the way, as far as I know, the American seating, that is now the standard seating in most of the world, originated right here in Philadelphia. With Stokowski. Everybody was sitting like they sit now in my orchestra. Everybody was sitting like that until 1925 about. But when they started to make recordings, they noticed that the second violin sitting very far away from the first violin, and the microphone picked up that. They heard that they are not completely together. So they will be simpler if they sit together. So Stokowski said, why not put them together? But they lost the stereo effect. So I think one of my responsibilities, and I think of every conductor, is to restore as much as possible of the original sound. And the piece was composed for violins sitting to the right, second violins. You can hear it. You can see it in the score that it's composed like that. So what I am doing is not something fancy idea of mine. I try to go back to what the composer, what he wanted.
Very interesting. We look forward to hearing the Brahms. Thank you so much, Maestro.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.